We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Aikman is intercepted by Sam Mills. Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown!
For the touchdown by Moore.
And in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone.
Keep pounding on three. 1, 2, 3.
Keep pounding.
Welcome back to another episode of The Roar, brought to you by Blue Wire. I am your host, Billy Marshall. And as always, to help break down another week of Carolina Panthers football, I am joined by my co-host, John Ellis. Mr. One Panther Place on Twitter. John, what's up?
What's up, Billy? Good to be back with you, man. Let's digest an 0-2 start together. We'll get through it.
Yeah, it was another close performance against, I don't know how I would characterize the Giants. They are a rebuilding team, which is not like the Cleveland Browns, but I would say, like the Cleveland Browns, they have mediocre quarterback play, and this was another game where Carolina should not be losing, especially if they have ambitions for playoffs. And I'm not going to probably use the P word anymore because they are 0-2, and Matt Rhule loses another close game. This was just an ugly football game, to be honest, especially in that first half. I was watching. I mean, most people don't know, but I usually have like 2 to 3 games on at a time. I have a pretty cool setup in my room ever since COVID, actually. Watching games at home has been kind of like my go-to. And I just kind of have this setup here, and I had the Panthers on one of my monitors, and I kept watching, and I just kept looking at it, and it was a consistent, and this is both teams, but you can kind of absolve the Giants in some ways because they're rebuilding. Brian Daboll's in his first year, so it's whatever. But we're a Panthers podcast, so we're going to discuss them. It was just offensively, there's no creativity. There's very vanilla like pass concepts. The quarterback isn't playing particularly well. I mean, he made some fine throws, but it was just a slop fest, and then it didn't even get it got better in some moments in that second half, but for the most part, I don't know how you can watch that Baltimore and Miami game or just some of the like high quality football that we saw and also watch the Giants and Panthers and think that they are playing the same sport in the same league, because there's just a stark difference between these between those franchises and this one. And I don't know, John, I know you had some macro thoughts about this that you want to get off your chest, so you can respond any way you'd like.
Yeah, let's just get down to the brass tacks, okay? Because this is year three now for Matt Rhule. Early year three. It's not a full third year, but this is when we were supposed to see the transformation. This is when we were supposed to be sold, and we were sold, not only as fans, but those of us in the media who cover this team, that the redeeming quality about Matt Rhule in terms of the football side was program building. was building, developing programs. And we have chronicled sort of the circuitous path they have taken in terms of building a roster. Now, they've done some good things, and we will highlight those things throughout the show. I've got plenty of notes here that highlight positives. But it gets back to this structural issue they've had for a couple of years now, not only in terms of figuring out what they want to do at quarterback, and I'm not saying it's easy, but it shouldn't be this damn hard. It shouldn't be, you know, chasing your tail every offseason for the next shiny object, or settling for plan C or plan D when plan A, B, C fails. But to your point that the offense, it's early. I get it. It's week two. I'm not firing anybody. I'm not interested in doing that today. I can't anyway. That's way above our pay grade, of course. But we can certainly offer some numbers and some critique, and then some broader views on what this means for the fan base. That's my biggest concern. So this team now under Coach Rhule, 1-26 in games in which they allow 17 or more points. That is, as my brother told me, who knows more football, I think, than I do, that's expansion team level stuff right there. That is a team that no matter who's on the roster, no matter who the quarterback is, you have to find a way in games that are tight, that are low scoring, to be able to pull those out. 1-26 is outrageous. You look back at their last 17 games, Billy, and that's the sample size we use because 17 games obviously is a full season. They're 3-14. Their average margin of defeat in those games now, 12.5 points, 14 losses, average margin of defeat, 12.5 points. Now, Matt Rhule did say we're getting closer. And look, technically they are. They're close in these games. But then you look at the record they've had in terms of game-winning drives. He's 0-for. He has not won a game as a head coach here when the team has had an opportunity to push the ball down the field in a game-winning situation. And it happened again this week against the New York Giants. It happened last week against Cleveland when they did go down and take the lead. But once again, it's complimentary football. Here's the bigger picture for me. I can spit numbers out all day and I can, you know, scream fire Rhule and all this. It's not something I'm interested in doing. The fan base is at an all-time apathetic low. You see it on social media. You see it on the message boards. You see it when you talk to people. And again, I get people all the time telling me, well, Twitter's not real life. Okay, fair enough. I talk to Panthers fans every day. I care immensely about this franchise. I care immensely about their heritage, about their history. I grew up loving this team. And I've had to shift my focus lately, strategically so, on becoming more objective. But I've got three kids at home, and they love this team. And they could care less right now, Billy. They could care less. Because as you mentioned, it's not just the fact they're losing. That's some bad football we saw on Sunday. That's bad, sloppy. The opening kickoff, they fumble it. I mean, we talk all season long, all offseason about being prepared, being at the top of your game, coming into this season out of the gate with a schedule that's manageable. And you're doing things like allowing just gap scheme runs right up your ass against the Browns, just getting gashed left and right. You got Burns in coverage 15 snaps for whatever ungodly reason against the Giants when he had two sacks and four tackles and a couple of TFLs. And just offensively, to your point, there's no pre-snap misdirection. There's no motion. There's no angles. You know what I'm talking about, Bill? You see this with McDaniel's offense. You talk about this all the time with Shanahan, McDaniel, these guys who run, and McVay as well. They run a lot of motion concepts to build angles in the blocking game.
Yeah.
And it's just so frustrating to see they had this time all offseason to install their system, to install their identity. And what is their identity? I don't know. All I know is they're losing games, and they can't stop losing games. And it's frustrating on behalf of fans out there to see this. It's depressing, and it's apathetic. And it's a big week for Matt Rhule. because you're coming home into a homestand. You're three in a row. You better damn well start winning some games. And I'm not saying that because, oh, David Tepper's going to fire you. I have no idea what the owner's thinking here. I could care less. It's time to start winning games and getting the fan interest back in, because right now all it is clowning the coach, memes on Twitter, memes on message boards, people screwing around, laughing at this and that. It's a shit show. And it's time for these players' sake, some of whom have a lot of responsibility and accountability to these losses, but many of whom deserve a lot better than how they're being coached and managed right now. It's time for this team to start winning games. I'm sorry. And that's on behalf of the fans. And I'll leave it at that. It's frustrating.
And I think one thing you can take away from the players' point of view is that you've seen some players who are in this system or have been part of this franchise go on to different organizations, and you're seeing them shine. I think the best example of that is probably Russell Douglas. You know, he was a veteran minimum guy when they signed him in 2020, and he looked fine. He was a pretty competent NFL corner. And then he goes to Green Bay, and he really excels for them in their system, and then he gets rewarded with a pretty nice contract this offseason. And, I mean, we're not going to – obviously, we know Hassan Reddick is talented in his own rights, but but there are other guys that this organization had the opportunity to keep. And they didn't. James Bradbury, Graham Gano, Trey Turner.
Yeah.
And so.
So many moves. These are many, a litany of moves they've made that had just made no sense to me. And never from day one. And people kept telling me, John, be patient, be patient. And I've been patient. And I'm going to feel like it's fine. I'm detached. But on behalf of fans who are just so apathetic right now, it frustrates me so much because people talk to me as if, oh, who are you? You're a bandwagon fan. No, I'm not. I've been doing this since 1990 friggin' five. So I know what good football looks like right now. And this is just brutally honest. If you disagree with it, please, at One Panther Place, hit me up. This is the most bleak stretch of football and energy in franchise history over the last 3 years. The most bleak stretch, even worse than Seifert. Seifert had them playoff ready his first year. At least you can say that. So there's the emotional side of it. I'll get out of the way here. We'll talk football now.
No, that's a very welcome perspective that you brought. And I just want to conclude with that. I'm not going to go over what moves Matt Rhule didn't make or did make. I just want the attention to be on how the football is being played right now. And I can tell you, I mean, you faced the Giants with Daniel Jones. And again, all due respect to Brian Daboll and Wink Martindale, these are two excellent coaches. Okay. I'm not taking anything away from them, but that is not a talented Giants team. And I was watching the game and I even tweeted it, John. How do you think Wink Martindale's defense would be playing if they had Kayvon Thibodeau and Azeez Ojulari playing and they had better talent in their secondary? They're doing this without their top two edge rushers of probably arguably the worst secondary in the NFL. Xavier McKinney is a good player, as you guys heard from our guests last week, but this is not a talented defense. And for them to just, I don't know, this passing offense, and I get it, there were drops too. They have to own it. Chai Smith, he didn't cover himself in glory this past week, but unfortunately drops are part of the equation. You have to rebound from them. And they just could not do it. They're putting themselves into huge holes, second and long, third and long. And I don't necessarily put it all on Mayfield, and it's not. It's difficult for any quarterback. I don't care how good you are when you're putting yourself in those situations. You have to be better on first and second down. You have to give him an opportunity on third down, if you are in that position, to make it more manageable. And they're not doing that. And so for me, we mentioned this all offseason, John. We said, how is this dynamic going to be struck between Matt Rhule, a coach who fired Joe Brady because he wasn't running the ball enough? He was citing, you know, we got to run this amount of times. And then he comes
33 times.
Exactly. And then he comes back last week and says, you have to throw the ball to win, which I don't disagree with. But it's just the marriage between McAdoo and Rhule never seemed quite complete to me. There's just, I don't sense any tension between them. I'm sure they're good. I don't have any insider knowledge on what those two are going through. I can just tell based on each of those two guys, their philosophies, there was going to be some issues offensively. And I don't think there's any issues between them. I'm just telling you that when you put a coach who has made it very publicly known, and it's not just him. I mean, Greg Cosell has told you this too, that he wants to run the ball with the offensive coordinator who hasn't coordinated in a few years, who likes to pass the ball. It's just not going to work. And again, my final point on all this is McAdoo obviously has to do a better job, but this is who Ben McAdoo is. He's not going to turn into one of these hotshot offensive coordinators that you really wanted at the end of last year when Jay Glazer made that report. He's not going to turn back the clock. He is a guy who's very old school and traditional in his thinking. Yeah. And, you know, I know a lot of people like to give Mike McCarthy grief, but he doesn't call the plays in Dallas. It's Kellen Moore.
Yeah. And
Kellen Moore isn't perfect by any stretch, but he at least looks for matchups. He does pre-snap motion. He does play action. None of that is happening here with Ben McAdoo. And I'm not sure he has anyone on staff to really rectify that issue. And again, I'm not going to relitigate the Joe Brady discourse, but to me, in the modern NFL, you have to look for advantages in every single sense of the word offensively. And that means pre-snap motion. That means play action. That means creating angles in the run game. That's how Mayfield was successful with the Browns in 2020, with Stefanski calling the plays. And if you're going to play to your QB strengths, you got to, I don't care what QB you are, honestly, even if you're Josh Allen or Mahomes, you need these type of advantages to really help your offense. And they're just not doing that. And obviously it's not leading to any type of production in the air or on the ground. Well, yeah, I will say right. On the ground, they were fine this week, but
fine. Yeah. And McCaffrey ripped off a long one. And there, I think the interior portion of this offensive line has actually done a good job. I mean, you look at PFF as sort of a first stop. You see the grades, and then you go to the tape, and you kind of confirm. And, yeah, I looked at the tape too, and I thought Christensen at left guard, Corbett at right guard, and Elflein at center, they've all been very good together. Now, he's going to struggle. We know that. And it's a little bit troubling against – you mentioned the two premier edge rushers for New York not in that game. You saw Wink dialing up a little bit of, you know, zone dog stuff and some edge heat with some safeties, and – I thought McKinney did a great job on McCaffrey in the past. I mean, they had some guys now for New York kind of step it up a little bit and play to a higher level. That's just good coaching. And credit the players there. But, you know, look, there's been some talk and some conversation on Twitter, and I respect the guys that do it, but I can't speak to it because I don't know it to be true, that there's been strife between some of the coaching staff hires and some of the coordinators, and I have nothing – to back that up. But it doesn't mean it's not true. But it is interesting, Billy. It's one thing I didn't spend enough time on probably thinking about, and you raised a good point about McAdoo. They have a lot of new guys in important positions right now. You've got Phil Snow, who runs some unconventional stuff as a defensive coordinator, and Steve Wilks on that staff, who's been a DC, who's been a head coach, who carries a lot of weight. And you've got Al Holcomb there, who's more of an NFL-structured guy. Offensively, James Campen is new to this for Carolina. He's getting to know these guys, even Chris Tabor. So that probably takes a little bit of time when you get into live bullet season here, so to speak, in regular season play, to have everybody in sync on the same page. It is concerning. You know, again, I know these are close losses, and I know Ron Rivera, third year, started 1-3. And they just exploded. It just doesn't feel like this team has that right now.
No.
It doesn't. That you knew those losses early, like Buffalo. That was a really bad coverage breakdown on EJ Manuel's touchdown pass. They throttled the hell that season out of the New York Giants, and then they go on the road to Arizona and get their ass kicked, and then they start putting together their identity, which is we're going to be hard up in the paint. We're going to pound you with Tolbert, Stewart, Newton. We're going to run play action, deep shots off of that, hit the seams. Billy, they're not throwing anything in between the numbers right now. Nothing. Nothing's being challenged there. It's tough. It's tough to watch. It's bad football. And
let's stick on that middle of the field point, which is kind of interesting because a lot of people raise their eyebrows when they gave Ian Thomas that contract, but he's been pretty decent to start the year.
Yeah, he's been all right. He's been in the blocking game too. I mean, he's made some good blocks, and when he gets his hands on the ball, we know Ian can run. We know he's got talent. But, just, you know, that Cleveland game, they hit a couple seams. They hit a couple breakdowns there. But, like, in general, the Giants game, it was all outside the numbers, and it was ugly, especially in the third and fourth quarter.
Yeah, again, we're not going to speak to unconfirmed reports, especially if it's not coming from one of the major outlets who cover the team, whether that's a Joe Person, a Steve Reed, a Scott Fowler, Ellis Williams.
And quickly, Nick Carbone. I'm not knocking the people who put that out there. I don't want to get any guff on Twitter. And if I do, you know, whatever. But this is, to me, my principle is, if I talk to people around the league and I can't get, oh, yeah, you know, there's something to that, I'm not running with it. So take it for what you will. I just think it's interesting that this team right now, the bigger picture is they're losing way too many games. They're not executing in critical situations, which, by the way, an opening kickoff is pretty critical. You can't just put the ball on the damn ground. And then he put it on the ground again later. I know he was out of bounds, but, you know, these are little things that can just cost you big. They lost by 3 points, and New York gets those 3 points on that first possession off a fumbled kickoff. Little damn things you can't do to be a championship caliber team, let alone a playoff caliber team.
And again, that's a difference between a team that's well-coached and a team that isn't, because the Giants, they didn't win. Well, they made some plays, but I don't necessarily think they did anything crazy to win that game. They're just so well coached. They don't make those mistakes. Now, obviously, Daniel Jones nearly threw a pick to LeVou at the end of the half. But after that play, Brian Daboll was like, you know what? We're going to set up shop. We're going to close out the half. We're just going to go into halftime, score tied at 6. We're not going to do anything else crazy here and get ourselves into trouble. And I don't know what Brian Daboll is going to be as an NFL head coach. I just know that he's been around the NFL for a long time. He's coached under Belichick and Sean McDermott, and he coached under Saban at Alabama, that he knows how to properly – he knows how to run an NFL team. And
yeah, he does.
I'm confident that the Giants are in good hands moving forward. But with this organization, it's just – it's too much of the same. And for everyone comparing it to Ron Rivera in 2013 – Let's just remind you that they lost to the team, the week one, they lost to the team that will win the Super Bowl, the Seattle Seahawks. And week two was an extremely fluky loss to the Bills, where it just nothing about that ending makes any sense. And you see fluky losses happen. You saw it in Baltimore, you saw it in Cleveland, you nearly saw it in LA with the Falcons nearly coming back. So that stuff happens. But to me, none of these necessarily these losses, and it can be explained by anything other than just poor execution and poor coaching and game management. And I don't necessarily have an issue with Matt Rhule's game management this season. It's been fine. I think that was the issue the previous years. But the other thing to remember, John, is this is the 2012 Panthers, they finished on a 4-game winning streak.
Yes, thank you.
So they finished 7-9. They came and they had more importantly, they had a quarterback who played in the same system for three or four years. I understand there's some differences between Chudzinski and Shula. I get it, but it was for the most part a pretty similar offensive system. And they weren't necessarily churning things left and right. And then obviously they went on that crazy streak in 2013 and they won the NFC South. So I don't really see many differences between them. Rivera, like you said, we're not going to relitigate anything about his tenure, but
it's really quickly. It's really important to point this out though, just to give it its proper context. And I've never seen the fan base so galvanized, and it's a negative. You know, you don't want to see people get fired. I'm not in that business of like, oh, let's fire a guy. You want to win, and you want to see everybody happy. But even look at like the analytics, the EPA stuff, offense and defense. The last chunk of the season, like from week 12 on with Ron Rivera in his first 2 years, was really good. They were – and they gave you – it wasn't just that. It was the wins. They got wins late in those seasons and pretty convincing wins. And it gave you hope as a fan. Like, it got your attention. Like, okay, you're going to take your lumps. We get that. There's going to be some losses. But, like, that backstretch of 2012, they were playing as good as any team down the stretch during that time. They beat Atlanta at home, who was the one seed at that point. Those are monumentally important when you're trying to, quote, build your program, quote, build your culture. And you're not seeing that. It's like my sons, again, who love this team, Billy. It's so apathetic. It's like it's just every week it's predictable. You turn it on, whether it's a close game, whether it's going to be a blowout. There's no sense that, okay, this team is moving in a direction where you can get excited about turning that TV on at 1 p.m. on Sundays. And that's a major problem this owner's going to have to face up to because, you know, revenue sharing being what it is, the soccer team is doing great. That's fine. But the football product is as stagnant as I've seen it in the 27 years I've been covering and cheering for this team. And that's a major issue. They're going to have to get that fixed, whether it's with Rule or without him.
Yeah, I totally agree. Let's move to the defense, and I got to give it to these guys. I understand there were some issues, and we'll get to them about dropping Brian Burns into coverage, but the big emphasis this week was stopping Saquon Barkley and the Giants' run game. Barkley obviously had a fantastic game in week one where he was a featured runner, and the Panthers, obviously, they gave up a ton, over 200 yards of rushing to the Cleveland Browns. So you figured coming into this week, this is going to be a major talking point, and you had to assume that the Giants would have a major strategic edge in this department. But I think the run defense does deserve credit here for limiting Barkley to 3.4 yards a carry. And it wasn't just on 10 or 12 carries, it was 21 carries. And over time, that gets pretty deflating for an offense because you're not really moving the ball as well as you'd like. So let's just start there. The run defense was a key coming into this game, and I think that they responded.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is where last night, you know, we put up film and we have a few laughs, and you know, I tweet to people at One Panther Place, hey, look, if you can't laugh along, just don't follow the account, because when you've lost, what, 14 of 17 games dating back to last year, you got to stay sane. You got to laugh a little. I think most coaches of the right mind would be of that mindset, too, to keep it light. In the first half of that game, 8 carries, 0 yards for the Giants. Frankie LeVoux had 7 tackles, 3 for a loss. He had a pass defense. Now, obviously, he dropped an interception. I mean, that was a tough play. But the takeaways, we'll talk about that, I'm sure, at some point in the show. They got to start getting those. But the run defense was outstanding. They got gassed a little bit at times the second half. But no, overall, I was real pleased with the contributions of LeVoux. I thought, you know, Burns in the run game was pretty solid. Xavier Woods as a run support safety has been really good. I like that. The force defenders were good in the run game. Dante, you know, obviously he's hurt right now. We hope he plays Sunday, but he had a nice little run stop on the perimeter there. And then Marquand McCall gets in. Bravian Roy has been mentioned today on Twitter, is going to miss some time now. I thought McCall had some nice plays, some big-time plays late in that game. Tackle for loss, 4 tackles in his NFL debut. So, again, some things to be very optimistic about defensively as you're facing the home run hitter in Barkley. At any moment, that was what Phil Snow had talked about throughout the week, that the one thing you worry about, he's not like Nick Chubb and he's going to ground and pound you for 30 times and 200 yards. There's a chance that Barkley can go Barry Sanders on your ass at any moment. His longest run of the day was 16 yards. So, I mean, that was a pretty damn good job by their defense overall, holding him to 3.5 yards per carry. Giants finished with 33 carries, 103 yards, 21 of which were Daniel Jones. So, again, good job by the run defense there, no doubt.
Yeah, and again, you've posted some clips. Brian Burns, Derek Brown, I think they both responded. I know there's been some discussion, especially about the latter. Derek Brown's performance in week one probably wasn't to the standard, but I don't necessarily blame it all on him. I just don't think he's a type of nose tackle to really hold up, you know, to gapping and holding up against the run in that regard. But right. What did you make of Brown's kind of redemption here in week two?
Yeah, I thought he looked good on tape, Billy. He was active. You saw him at times, you know, out of the pocket in pursuit, doing some things too. He finished with 4 combined tackles. He got a hit on the quarterback. And he graded out well. When you look at the tape in the run game, he was, you know, used him at nose a little bit. He was at 3 technique. That's kind of what they do with him. And they, you know, Phil would run some of those odd fronts throughout the game. And there were some 3 down line packages, and you'd have Burns in coverage. And I'm not going to go nuts on that. The defense played well enough to win this game. Well, I thought Brown had a much better week this week. I thought the defensive tackles in particular, Ioannidis had a great sack there. Burns hit, you know, assisted on that with some really good bend around that left tackle. Marcus Haynes, you know, did some good things there in the passing game. He doesn't get a lot of snaps, but when he's on the field in like third and seven plus, he's a guy to look out for. So I thought defensively, you know, between, you know, the defensive tackles and your edge guys, you know, YGM played a little better, I thought, in this game. There was good energy out there. I mean, you like to see it. Linebackers, fair enough. I mean, they were fine. They filled their gaps with more integrity this week, but I think it really started with LeVue getting in there and kind of wrecking things early on in the first half and set the tempo. And then, you know, throughout the course of the game, the entire defensive front, even when Roy went out, I thought McCall came in and played well. But no, hats off to Derek Brown. He looked much better this week.
Yeah, and if I were to pick a stock rising for this week, it would definitely have to go to the run defense, just simply because I'm not sure it could be as low as it could last week.
Right.
But this week, they certainly responded in a big way, and in a way that really, that's the sort of improvement you're looking for. And we see that improvement on defense. And I thought J.C. Horn also had a pretty decent game. Again, he's not necessarily going up against world beaters, but I think this was a good game for him just to get his feet wet in some regards. You're not going to necessarily see the blue chip alpha wide receiver, but it just gives him more reps, more snaps to get fully comfortable. So when he is up against a really good wide receiver, whether it's this week against Michael Thomas and Jarvis Landry, it just continues to allow his progression to fully come back from his injury. Do you have a stock rising you want to mention?
Yeah, stock rising. I would say if you want to look at, you know, sort of the defense as a whole, the run defense was better. And again, I go back to two guys in particular, Marquand McCall, again, his NFL debut, getting in there with several tackles, had a tackle for loss. I thought that was encouraging. I love his size. I love his ability to challenge there. And I think Burns, you know, I a lot of people, you know, and I know he went sackless week one. It's not easy to get a multi-sack game in this league. It's not. And he did affect the quarterback a couple of times. He had four quarterback hits in the game. He had a pair of tackle for losses in the run game. His utilization, look, that's between him and the coach. They'll work that out, I'm sure. But I thought for the number of times he was lined up in a traditional pass rush or setting the edge type of position where he's not in coverage, again, he was in coverage 15 times. That's a career high for him, according to PFF. I'd say, you know, Burns, the people are saying, you know, he kind of bit on Daniel Jones one or two times and miscontained. Yeah, that'll happen. Clean that up. But no, multi-sack game is always worth pointing out. They had three sacks on the day. And Ioannidis, let's mention him too. I thought, you know, overall, in terms of disrupting the pass, did a pretty good job. So there's a trio right there for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Stock falling for me, it's got to be Ben McAdoo. He has to get better. And I don't know what he can dive into in his deep trick of plays, but something has to improve offensively. And I think the schematic design and implementation part of it, whether it's pre-snap motion, play action, you know, scheming receivers open, he has to do a better job to help his quarterback. Okay, Baker Mayfield is not a quarterback that's just going to drop back 5 to 7 steps, scan a defense, and then throw a receiver open. That's just not his game. And that's we can have a discussion about whether that should be his game, but that's not the point. They should play to the quarterback's strengths, okay? And for a quarterback that thrives on reading the field and ripping it, he can make all the throws. I have no issue with that. And he doesn't necessarily put the ball in harm's way like Darnold does, but it's just about playing to his strengths and giving him options that really help his vision. And I think he can read the field acceptable. I mean, certainly he's not perfect at it, but Ben McAdoo's got to be better, because right now I just don't feel like he's playing to his QB strengths. And unfortunately, it's hindering the offense as a whole.
Dovetailing off that, stock falling aren't necessarily people or things, but just a general area, two areas offensively, is red zone efficiency, 1 of 4. That's terrible. You got to be better than that. You mentioned how many guys the Giants were missing in critical spots. Even one of their premier defensive tackles went out of the game late. You've got to be able to convert in the red zone, especially against a team that, you know, look, Wink Martindale's very good at what he does, but Carolina needs to be better there. And then the utilization of wide receivers, you know, Ben McAdoo had talked about this after the week one loss. They need more at-bats. He used a baseball analogy, and I agree. They didn't have a lot of plays, and you don't really have an opportunity to get certain guys into a rhythm. But my God, Billy, Rashard Higgins was brought here from Cleveland, chiefly among other reasons. You know, you've got some great built-in chemistry with Mayfield. They've connected 10 times on touchdowns in their career. He had a very good camp. He had a pretty good preseason. And then Terrace Marshall Jr., these guys have combined for 6 snaps in 2 games. Higgins hasn't had a snap all season. So I get that they want to really concentrate on this 11 personnel and Shai Smith is their option in the slot. But he had some drops, as you mentioned. So, again, at what point do you wake up in the middle of a game and say, you know what, it's time to start utilizing Higgins, maybe Marshall a little more than they did? Marshall had 2 route reps. He had 4 pass blocking reps in this game. That, to me, is unacceptable. You talk about drafting, developing guys. I'm all for Shai Smith, but get a little power in the slot there. I mean, you know, mix it up a little bit. They don't have a lot of size at receiver. You've got 2 guys there with pretty good size, especially Marshall. Hell, it can't get much worse in the red zone. Let's see what else they can do. So that's where my stock falling is. Just utilize your wide receiver personnel better. Sounds like Matt Rhule is going to try to make a commitment to doing that. Although after the game, he said, we don't need to change anything. He came back and said, well, perhaps we look at changing things. And, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt. At least he kind of reconsidered. But I'll believe it when I see it. We got to start seeing better production in the red zone. And I want to see more of Marshall and more Higgins.
Yeah, and before we do sign off, again, some interesting quotes from Matt Rhule, which, you know, if you're struggling like he is, the people not only on Twitter, but across the national media, they're going to pick up on it and they're going to analyze it. That's just fair game. It is what it is. People have done that with struggling coaches until the NFL existed. So for me, I'm just not going to participate in this firing and hiring coaching cycle. Like, I just want to focus on the product on the field. Like you said, I'm not firing anyone. These are NFL coaches and they have to step up. And that's just the biggest thing. Okay. Again, I want to see improvements from Ben McAdoo to really elevate this offense and help this QB. I want to see Matt Rhule continue to figure out a way to win these close games, or else I'm not sure like his employment status is going to eventually catch up to him, because I do think the owner or somebody is going to, you know, put in a word with him that, hey, you're not winning enough games. But yeah, for us, it's, and I get it. Like, the fan base is just, they're tired of losing, and I don't blame them. And they should have these discussions and they should be able to vent however they like. But for me, I'm just so tired of arguing about whether this coach should be fired, and whatever personal opinion you or I have on that, I just don't want to continue to litigate it on every episode that we do. It's just, it gets tiring, and I'm sure there's other analysis that if it does eventually happen, we'll be able to dissect it and do an overview of why he got fired. Or if he turns this around, then we can give an overview and a full analysis on the decisions that he made that helped him turn this organization around. But for now, just focus on the Saints. They're coming off a loss too. Figure out a way to get your team ready for Sunday. Let's hope the offense improves and the defense maintains its level from last week, and we'll move forward from there. But that's just where I am. I know you had similar thoughts too.
Yeah, totally. Look, it's counterproductive. And look, there were times last year where, you know, for shits and giggles and, you know, it's not just that. Look, you and I have said our piece about what we feel in terms of this structure. But you've got major players in the NFL media ecosystem out there zoning in on some of the things that are happening here and really understanding, wow, okay, it's not just what you say, it's what you put out there on the field. And it's a bad combination of the two. The product is not good, and the commentary and the messaging has not been, you know, as great as it can be. But I can't fire anybody. I don't know what the owner wants to do. It's none of my business. So to your point, yeah, the focus this year has been much more on let's just dive into the tape. That's a good sanctuary when things are bad and even good to kind of get into the meat of what's going on. We have enough acumen to understand what we're looking at here and give our perspective on this very show, which now we're into year three. It's hard to believe that. But I'm tired of this Groundhog Day routine of just, okay, the clown emojis and all. Look, great, go for it. Fans, I understand. You know, Jim Donovan up in Cleveland, who's been a longtime media member there, put out a commentary on social. Go find it. I think Nick Wilson up there, our old friend that works in Cleveland radio, used to be in Charlotte, tweeted it out. And he went on a rant about, you know, people, I think Myles Garrett, among others, saying you shouldn't be booing us. Well, that's bullshit. I mean, this is the NFL. It's a high stakes business. Everybody's being paid, at least on the top tier of things, players and coaches, a ton of money to produce results, including this head coach. And, you know, I am not going to engage in like just cheap shots on anybody from this organization, but it's time to start winning games. It's time to stop talking about it. It's time to start doing it. Dom Capers, look, he had some bad years here too. But one of the things I loved, he had a great quote. He said, deeds, not words. And it's time to pay up. It's time to pay the piper, Billy. Time to win. We can talk about development and growth. The great teams, you see it with Philadelphia right now. You've seen it with Buffalo. They draft the quarterback. They develop the quarterback. They add pieces around the quarterback, and they thrive. And then eventually they re-up that contract for that quarterback. This team has played Russian roulette at quarterback, trying to find somebody to duct tape this thing together. And I like Mayfield in a lot of ways, but is that sustainable? I don't know. But don't, you know, don't jump down fans' throats for being upset. I mean, that's the one thing I will say. And to echo your point, it's going to be a more productive type of perspective from me and you both this year in terms of just, hey, let's just look at the players. Let's focus on that. Let's look at the tape. Let's break this shit down. And just sort of simulate how we would do things if we were in that chair. We're not, we never will be. We get that, folks. But that's the culture we build on this show, I guess you could say. So well said, my friend. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, there's still a lot of football left. Like I said, there's still a chance that things can turn around. It begins here with this 3-game homestand with the Saints, who didn't really look particularly impressive offensively last week, and then the Cardinals, who had to use some Kyler magic to come back, and then the 49ers, who are going through a quarterback change, which some people think it benefits them. But at the same time, these are three games that you have to figure out a way to win. You had two easy games to begin the year. You didn't win them. Fair enough. Matt Rhule said in his presser that they started 0-2 in 2020, and then they won three in a row. So yep. Let's see you back that up, because this is a good opportunity in front of your home fans to really, you know, start stacking some wins. So we will have a preview pod later on this week with the guest from the New Orleans Saints perspective. But for tonight, that's going to be it. John, any final parting thoughts?
Hang in there. Hang in there. That's all I can tell you, folks. Hang in there.
Okay, everyone, thank you, and we'll see you next time.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.